It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland, the Sound Mind broadcast, and discussing issues of the mind and the marriage this week. Daniel, this is a subject you've dealt with several times. You want to get back to it again because it's practical, rubber meets the road applications, how married couples make changes for the better this week.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's kind of like the kind of the iniquity that's ever before your face. This is like a situation in, this is kind of like what they call the part of the bread and butter of counseling. Mm-hmm. It's the, and
would you say just, about what, half your clientele, it's marital issues that you
probably
deal with?
Something like that. And, you know, Mark, on these shows, I should remind people when from time to time when we come on here, these shows aren't designed to really solve all the problems. They kind of hit the tops to tell people, you know, what we can do. From time to time, people ask me, do you take phone-ins? And, you know, my idea on phone-ins is that you never really get down and help people in the phone-ins. People might get a little bit, but a lot of these married couples needing to make change, it takes a while to get the program going. And one of the things I find in single people, groups of people, and married couples is that one of the barriers to change is the disbelief that the change will actually take place and make a difference. Mm. So getting people to buy into it and believe it and actually recognize
that you
it
can
when it
change.
Happens. Yeah, yeah, sure. And there's a formula for change. I think I've done a show on that before, and so we're going to bring some of that back out here today. And of course, one of the things that's the primary issue in talking about change is to establish a purpose, because process follows purpose. You know, when people come in for counseling, they are invariably coming in because they are lost or frustrated in the process. And if we recognize the principle of life that process always follows purpose, and if I don't have a purpose, then that would be a lot of the problem of why every process frustrates me, because I'm not sure where we're going. So to articulate the purpose is very important. Well, within marriage, the marriage relationship, you can articulate purposes from time to time. You know, going to buy a new house, going to buy a boat, going to take a vacation, do something like that, going to do a remodel. But underlying that should be the purpose of marriage, should be an overall, an objective in marriage that pulls all of the other lesser objectives into focus and perspective. Disappointments, processes involve disappointments, but if I have the proper purpose in mind, even the disappointments make sense. You can draw an analogy with any work experience that you've had, where aspects of the work experience are frustrating, and then if someone gives you a little more information about what the objective is, then somehow that frustrating part of the process can make sense, and it's not quite as frustrating. Kids go through this in homework, of course, and people trying to train for athletic events, you know, they go through the pain because they have this goal, this clear goal in mind, they understand that the pain is part of the process of getting to that goal.
So, and you say the purpose is?
The purpose simply stated, the purpose in marriage is unity.
Unity.
Now, we can go back to Genesis when God first created Adam and Eve, and we can go a little deeper, and I've kind of deduced from those scriptures for myself that the image of God, the image in which man is created, implies imminent, intimate relationship. That is the first and only place in Scripture where God refers to himself as a plurality. Interestingly, the Muslims, Muhammad quoted that from the Torah, the idea of God being a plurality, and then totally misses it when they have such an objection to the Son of God.
Absolutely.
And even Jewish tradition does the same thing, and there are writers in Jewish tradition that try to explain away that apparent confusion in Genesis where God is both speaking of himself as a singular and a plural, and also
But that didn't come into focus until Jesus the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And so even at the beginning of the Bible, it was speaking of this idea of Trinity,
this diversity
that's unified.
Yeah, and really, although the Trinity isn't explicitly brought out there, certainly intimate relationship. So you know that God is relational within himself,
right,
which to me is the only way that he could have created a universe that's relational within itself,
mm-hmm,
because his creation comes right from his nature. Mm-hmm. So when he creates man and woman, what is implied there to me is he creates man in such a way that man is eminently, intimately relational. And so there's a responsibility there of the husband and wife and the children of being in an intimate relationship, very much the same as the Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
That's our goal, that's our objective, and that's kind of the work that we have in mind. Having that purpose in mind, then, where does the where's the contradiction, or where do the problems really come in? The problem is a personality problem. Every conflict in marriage is a personality conflict. We use personality conflict, that term, to kind of represent kind of the mother of all troubles, or that's the big one that you can't fix, the personality conflict. It's you hear this in the workplace. Well, that's a personality conflict, which means somebody should move on,
right?
Because this isn't going to work. Well, every conflict is a personality conflict.
Sure.
Every human conflict is a personality conflict. One of the things that I'll bring out here in the beginning is the idea of personality, because it's going to have to do with what we talk about in the second part of the show as well, and that is that personalities are defense mechanisms. I think it was last year, maybe mid-year, when we did a couple of radio shows on personality.
You've really gotten into that.
Yeah, so if people are listening and they're curious about that, at the website BibleBasedCounselor.com, if you go click on the podcast link, BibleBasedCounselor.com podcast, and then at the bottom of the podcast page, you'll see how you can go to a previous page. It'll say older podcasts or newer podcasts. So if you go back to about mid 2016, last year, there are a couple on personality, but basically it's something like this. If you can envision a triangle being a personality, up at the top, say, talk about the triangle as being a mountain, a symmetric mountain. Up at the top, I'm going to draw an imaginary line across the top and call that the snow line. And above the snow line is what the APA would maybe call a personality disorder, quote unquote, personality disorder. I like to talk about disordered personalities, not personality disorders, because we all have personalities that are more and less disordered depending upon where my personality, for example, is very disordered. If I'm getting written a speeding ticket, I'm way up at the top of my personality. That personality, take the triangle, draw a bisecting line right down the center. That bisecting line represents the core of my personality, which for all of us is a defense mechanism. And so the tighter my behaviors are and my realities are around that defense mechanism, the less I can deal with other people, the more defensive I am, paranoid, et cetera, et cetera. This is where the rub comes in marriage, where you've got two personalities and the tendency for us to retreat to the core of our personality, which is a defense mechanism, and not to the opposite of that would be to venture out from those that core mechanism, that defense mechanism, out toward that other person in terms of empathizing with that person, that is being vulnerable to the person, empathizing, sharing that person's reality, sharing that person's boundaries. We talk a lot about that in those other shows. That's really the journey, I think, of marriage, is getting away from my defense mechanisms and turning that relationship around to where it's actually about the other person. Mm. It's not about me.
Mm-hmm.
Husbands are told to, in effect, lay their lives down for their wife. And that should just, if you did that, that would probably solve all of the arguments, right?
Well, even
there.
Just Christian discipleship in general, it's about dying to self.
Yeah. So, take up your cross and follow me. And that should be a hint. The husbands are to lay down their lives for their wife. That, you know, if that would happen, I couldn't envision a situation where there would be an argument. Of course, the problem is that doesn't happen. And right. On the other side of the coin, women are to submit to their husbands as to the Lord. And if that were to happen, I couldn't imagine an argument. So we're both, it's kind of equivalent. Husbands are, as husbands, we're to lay our lives down. We don't have rights. As wives lay down their, it's an equivalent. And if we were doing that, each person putting the other one first, you could see how that would eliminate a lot of the personality conflicts, which are defense mechanisms. So that's really where it starts. The name of the show here, we're saying married couples, how they can make change for the better. Married couples come in. They want to change the process. They want to make change. They want to get on the other side of the issues. They want to become that ideal couple, that couple that's in harmony, that couple that's, you know, kind of talk about being on the same page. She wants love. He wants respect. And
right.
Sometimes the other way around, too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he, you know, sex can be an issue in getting needs met. Seen situations in marriage where one handles the checkbook and all the money and the other one practically has to ask permission for, you know, $5 for a coffee or something like that. All kinds of different problems in the process that are generally there because there isn't unity of purpose. We don't first understand the purpose, and secondly, we don't understand the barrier or the, you know, to arriving at that purpose, that destination. And realizing that all of our conflicts are personality conflicts. So getting those two things in line kind of paves the way for the plan to actually make the change.
So working on that plan, this is something that you work out quite a bit in your counseling sessions. You do a lot of marital counseling. Mm-hmm. This kind of hints at what comes up in the second half of the show. Obviously, communication is a big word. Mm-hmm. We'll be discussing that here in a moment. But if people are struggling in their marriage, their relationships, and they need help. They need you to be kind of an arbitrator, kind of a go-between to help that process along.
Yeah,
that's what you specialize in. Life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. If people need help, how do they get in touch with you?
Yes, you can call me at 425-778-6169. That's 778-6169. People also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com. And all of, you know, Mark, there's almost 2 years of podcasts there, 90-some podcasts so far.
And they're all listed, the subject on each one of them.
Yeah,
and
right.
Great. So great stuff there at BibleBasedCounselor.com. Back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland on the journey today as well, and real meat and potatoes stuff today on the Sound Mind Show, how married couples make changes for the better. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the purpose is unity, the problem is personality conflict, and now getting onto the process, this second half of this show requires that big word we always hear about, communication.
Mm-hmm. Communication. And somewhere in the podcast that we mentioned last time at BibleBasedCounselor.com, way back, I think this is like 2015, so you'd have to go back a number of pages, but there would be one there entitled The Love Triad, and it would talk about trust, forgiveness, and communication, and that would also be helpful for people to kind of, if they're listening to this broadcast and they'd like to know more about it there, you know, go down the podcast, go back a few pages to 2015 somewhere, and you'll find one that's entitled the Love Triad, and so it's going to talk more about this, but yeah, we were talking about the problem being personality conflict, always personality conflict. It's always a conflict in personality. And, of course, working our way out of this obviously is going to require communication. Mm. One of the reasons people don't communicate is because they don't want to, whether we realize it or not, I'm not communicating because I don't want to change that personality because it's a defense mechanism. I had a couple come years ago, many years ago, and their primary problem, which is a lot of married couples report that they can't communicate. That's our problem. We can't communicate. Mm-hmm. And so this couple, we went overtime in that session. It was a long session, and they demonstrated clearly that they couldn't communicate. They couldn't meet on anything.
So a lot of communicating, but just kind of communicating past each other.
Well,
it wasn't landing.
They weren't even exchanging data. They were just talking over each other back and forth. And so finally, I said, well, okay, we're going to have to bring a close to it. Mm-hmm. This will, meet again next week. And then I had remembered that we hadn't calculated the cost for the session because on a sliding fee. And I said, do you have any idea what your income is? And without a word, Mark, they looked at one another, raised eyebrows, and came up with a number. And I said, well, you're communicating now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not that we can't communicate. Aww. It's that we refuse to communicate. Mm-hmm. We can communicate. We just don't want to give up ground. And that's the personality part. And the communication, it requires communication. I've done shows on communication. Basically, when we get around to that point where we're willing to be vulnerable and willing, I'm not going to protect myself anymore. I'm going to be vulnerable. That's because without vulnerability, you're just simply not going to communicate. You might exchange data, but you're not going to have a singleness of unity, of purpose, and you're certainly not going to meld your personalities and empathize and share boundaries and share reality if you're not willing to be vulnerable. And that is the first thing I see in couples that can't communicate is each person standing his or her ground. You're not going to get there. All this is kind of a clinic in not, how not to communicate. And until you're vulnerable, until it's about the other person, you're not going to communicate. Then once you get to that point where it really is about the other person, which is certainly part of the journey, the communication tools are pretty clear. You could make them up yourself if there weren't a dozen books on it. But certainly starts with timing. There's a good time to talk about certain things and times when you can't talk about certain things. You have to be sensitive to that. Certainly the words that you speak. We have to get away from things like cliches and rhetorical questions like what was the matter with you, what were you thinking, those kinds of accusatory things. Be very careful about that and get very good about that, learning how the other person processes things. So, sometimes men are slower at processing verbally than women, and so there has to be an understanding and not only patience but support in that, in the way that the other person communicates. And I've had some really difficult situations where a couple, they've come in and we've gone over things, and I just thought they're just hitting a wall, and somebody's not being honest and somebody's not yielding. And then they'll say, we're not coming back. And a lot of times I'll get a call a couple years later and they'll say, oh, could we come in or could I come in? And it was, well, you're still married. What's going on? Well, we just finally did what you said, and it's just been working out so much better. So,
wow, you didn't think you were getting through to them, and that really did.
Sometimes you don't see the progress, and then they go away, and they kind of settle down and realize that they have to do that. So. So the words we speak, the tone of voice, obviously, and facial expression and body language. Mm. So those, basically those five. Mm. You can expound on it. It's like I said, if you sat down and thought about, we have to communicate, and you started thinking about the mistakes you've made in the past and how to better do that, you'd probably come up with your own good list of communication tools and what things you have to watch out on.
Can I interject here one thing about the communication? Because my wife and I did some marital counseling, and it really settled in on this idea of feelings, how important feelings are, and so much communication is loaded with the words kind of betray some kind of feeling that's going on, and whether or not you're validating that. And it's not just for women. You always think of the women are, though, you hurt my feelings. You're not, But both people have feelings.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And this idea of feelings communication, what about that? How do you work with that in a marital situation, particularly the way people communicate their feelings?
Yeah, and we express it differently, and you can, there are any number of books out there on how men express themselves and women express themselves, you know, differently, and they process things differently. But it is true that, you know, the brain hemispheres have something to do with this, and then it kind of becomes a chicken and the egg, you know. Is the whole mystique about the brain hemispheres because we're not trying, or are we not trying because of the brain hemispheres, or it's difficult because of that? But men certainly do have feelings. A lot of times, or sometimes it can be more easier for a man to tell a story or explain himself or describe the situation than actually to articulate the feeling,
right?
But men can get better at that.
Yes,
it's
and they need to.
Yeah, and
that's
they need
secret,
to. It's really just it's really just building bridges from the left brain to the right brain. You know, taking the experience and putting words to it. And once you've done that and practiced it a bit, then you can use the words just like your wife, and it speeds things up and it's easier. There are those differences,
and it seems to accelerate if you say, "Well, you shouldn't feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't." When
you're trying to
correct somebody else's feelings, it's like, boy, that is a losing game.
And so, to that, Mark, that gets me back to the previous discussion about personality, where that idea of getting away from my defense mechanisms I do in three ways that are kind of intertwined, and you can't really separate them, but. Empathy, which is having a physiological response to that other person's joy or pain. So actually feeling their, being vulnerable. You know, you won't do that if you're not vulnerable, but being vulnerable enough to feel their pain or feel their joy, physically feel that. Shared reality, affirming their right to have that position and feel that way. Now, they may be wrong, and they may have to change that. They may be dead wrong.
But they have to do that. You're not going to do it for them.
Yeah, and if you don't honor the fact that how they arrived at that, you know, that other person arrived at conclusions the same way I arrived at mine, and that needs to be honored and humanize the person rather than dehumanize.
Mm-hmm.
And shared boundaries and those things, that requires vulnerability. So that's what we were saying, that without vulnerability, you're really not going to communicate.
And then wrapping up here, the process is obviously we want to change. We do want to change and making changes for the better.
Yeah, and there's actually a process of change. And one of the things that, again, as I spoke earlier in the show, and I'll repeat here, that a lot of times change doesn't happen, or I don't see the change in couples or they don't see the change. And, you know, primarily until you've begun to change and you experience what change is like and what change looks like, there's liable to be change in the relationship that you don't see. And I've often pointed that out to couples that have been coming to counseling for a while and say, you're different than you used to be. And they're still struggling. And I have to point out to them, you're different. You talk differently than
progress.
You used to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so recognizing that this is what change looks like. And so we're actually making progress and keep at it. You know, it can be the same with the people that are learning to communicate or overcome an addiction. Well, there's a process to it. And I call it order of operation. This fits in so many ways, but the couple has to agree that they need change. They have to agree on what is our goal? What's our vision? I preface this again with vulnerability, because if you're not willing to be vulnerable, you're simply not going to get here, or it's just going to be words and be meaningless. But you know, where are we going? You know, articulate our goal. Write a list of what it's costing us to not meet that goal. What's it costing us in terms of spirituality and time and, you know, anything? Could be financial cost if you're paying for marriage counseling. And so cost to your children, cost to harmony in the home, et cetera, et cetera. So that would be number two. What is it costing us? So in effect, you're asking yourself, do we really have to make this change, or can we get there without making any change? And so the answer is yes, we do have to change. Well, what area should we work on is number three. And so you can't change everything at once. And what you find is that if you start making change in an area, it's like leaven in a loaf. The idea of change begins to permeate the whole relationship, and you find that change really isn't that difficult. So that's what area. Number five would be what specifically are we going to work on so that we're able to measure that change. For example, how are we going to work on our communication? We are going to only say smile and say kind words or something like that. You would articulate just how the change is going to look when you're doing it so that I recognize when that other person is trying and I can reward that. And then the fifth one in the process is how do I remember the first four? And which seems kind of simple to people, but it's really as important as any of the others. If you don't remember your mission statement, this is our goal, this is what we have to change, this is the area we're going to work on, and this is how we're going to measure it. If you don't remember those, you're not going to follow through. As I said at the beginning of the show, Mark, I just kind of hit the tops here. These are the things we work on in counseling, but I bring these 4 points out so that people actually realize, okay, I see there's a plan. You know, it may not be that tough. We can actually make some changes.
There can be a plan. How married couples make change for the better. If this is intriguing to you and you would like to delve deeper into these subjects, maybe a marital counseling few sessions with Daniel or anything else, how do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, you can call me at 425-778-6169. That's 778-6169. People also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
And locations in?
In Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, more details as well at KCISRadio.com. This has been the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.